Hi. Welcome to the very first episode of Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company. My name is Glenn Haskell, series creator, writer, and producer. I've been involved in audio drama since the mid-90s, but have never pursued a science fiction series, although I've worked on many science fiction series created by others. Today, you're invited to a very personal vision for science fiction. I wanted this series to be a little different than other similar series, and perhaps the best way to describe it is Mayberry meets the Twilight Zone. The storykeeper, expertly portrayed by veteran voice actor Joe Stufko, is the proprietor of Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company. He spends most of his time converting stories from the golden age of science fiction, 1930s to 1960s, into audio dramas. The rest of his time is spent matching finished stories with shop guests who are encouraged by what they hear. These guests may not even like science fiction when they stumble into the shop, but a good story is a good story. Oh, and we're fortunate to connect with Anthony Oenko from the Philippines, who provides a stellar original black and white sci-fi artwork for each episode. So, welcome to the small town of Sandwich, where the pace is slower. Green Birch Pawn Shop is just next door, and visitors seem to stumble into Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company and leave a little better for their visit. If you're ready, join me just outside the front doors of Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company. We have a one-way ticket. Up. And admission is always free.
Hello.
General Vega.
I'll be with you in a moment. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. It looks like I need to get that bell fixed.
Bell?
Yes, the one over the door.
You mean an actual bell?
Well, I'm not aware of any other kind.
Well, I guess that fits an antique shop.
And by the way, my name is Mark Highsmith, but my friends call me the Storykeeper. And you?
John Thompson.
Well, thank you for dropping by today, John.
This is a pretty unusual antique shop.
No, and yes.
So, yes, you are an antique store? Or no, you are not an antique store?
Tell me, what do you see when you look around the shop?
Lots of old furniture. An old radio.
Anything else?
Some old posters.
Yes, we have antiques. No, they are not for sale.
But the name of your shop?
The Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company.
The what?
Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company.
Sci-fi, as in?
Science fiction, yes.
How do you salvage and restore science fiction?
Well, it's a fair question, and you're not the first to ask. Here's a pamphlet with all the details.
Could you condense it for me?
Sure. Between 1930 and 1960, there were hundreds of short stories classified as science fiction. Some people call it the golden age of science fiction.
The golden age?
Of science fiction, yes. Now, the trouble was, science fiction was not as widely embraced as it is today. There were no television networks, movie series, broadly accepted books that were dedicated to the genre.
So how do you salvage and restore
science fiction? We salvage stories that exist in the public domain, and then we adapt the story to an audio drama. This is followed by a dedicated staff of volunteers visiting our soundstage. It's in the back. And we restore a forgotten story in a way that people can enjoy.
Really? Okay. Give me an example.
An example?
An example.
You want to hear a story?
Sure. Is that why they call you the storyteller?
Oh, not the storyteller, the storykeeper. I keep the stories that others told. Consider me a guardian, if you will.
Interesting.
Before we begin, I need to know something about you.
Like what?
Well, what are you most concerned about?
You mean like bills and health?
It's a start, but I'm sure there's something even more concerning.
Having enough money for retirement?
I think we're getting closer. But whose retirement are you most concerned about?
What do you mean?
Well, you're a young man. Most people your age aren't thinking much about retirement. So, whose retirement are you most concerned about?
My grandfather's, I guess.
He means a lot to you?
He does. He's worked hard his entire life. My grandma passed away last year.
You mentioned health as a concern. Is it his health?
It is. He deserves more than Social Security and a small retirement fund.
You know, John, I think I have the perfect story. Please pick a chair, whichever is most comfortable. Master science fiction writer Ray Bradbury wrote a story in 1951 called A Little Journey. We gave it our own treatment, and we call it One Way Ticket. For best results, close your eyes and use your imagination, and keep your mind fully engaged.
Were you expecting me?
I was.
Wait, what?
The story, John. Pay attention to the story.
Why is this taking so long?
Well, it's not as if the accommodations match Palm Beach.
Now those people know how to treat a guest.
Not like here.
You mean not like Mr. Thurkale?
There's something not quite right about that man.
But if we're ever to get off this planet, we'll need him.
His Nearer My God of E campaign had worked far better than Mr. Thurkale could have imagined. He had thought about marketing to families, but there was too much responsibility. Too many questions. His conscience wasn't seared enough. But hadn't he delivered on his promise so far? Hadn't he promised a place for his guests to stay while they waited? Weren't there enough reconstituted meal packets? At a barren outpost, Mr. Thurkale and his guests were waiting to experience the greatest religious experience of their lives. Mr. Thurkale had made a promise that those who made this trip would ultimately discover heaven, would be ushered in to the presence of God. The youngest of his guests was 74, and every guest on the ship's manifest was female except for a skeleton crew. Thurkale had succeeded so far, and he intended to finish what he started. Welcome to the Misfits audio presentation of One Way, inspired by Ray Bradbury's public domain short story, A Little Journey.
Mr. Thurkale? Mr. Thurkale? Oh. So pleased I caught up to you.
Mrs.
Bellows. Mrs. Amelia Bellows.
How may I be of service?
Well, I'm afraid the availability of water in my apartment is spotty at best. I am afraid I had expected more from such an arduous journey, Mr. Thurkale.
Well, consider your final destination, Mrs. Bellows. These temporary hardships can hardly compare with what's to come.
Yes, I suppose I should be more focused on the future.
There you are, Mrs. Bellows. Consider that. I'll send someone to your quarters to check on the water issue.
That would be lovely, Mr. Thurkale.
Yes, now run along and enjoy your day. I've got work to do if we're to move on to your final destination.
Ooh, by all means. I've kept you too long.
Mrs. Bellows, what are you doing?
Enjoying a little time in the observation room.
Are you missing home?
Not really, Betty. I miss my husband, George, and daughter, Emily, but they've both passed on. Perhaps that's why this trip means so much.
I understand completely, Amelia, dear. My own husband, Stanley, left before me. I really have no one. Oh, sure, my son Clarence is among the living, but he moved far enough away that I haven't seen him in years.
Well, dear, I'm glad for the company. Just look at that dot in the sky. Mr. Thurkale says that's the dot that holds our past.
And yet you and I, all we can think of is what lies ahead.
And the impatience I feel with each new delay.
Ah, Barker, come in. I've been waiting on a report on the rocket ship. Our old biddies are getting a little irritable.
I wish I had better news, sir.
You'd better come up with something, Barker.
I'm going to need another week, sir. We only have two other crew members, and one of them attends to the needs of the guests.
then the guests will have to fend for themselves. I need that ship, Barker. Time is not on our side.
Yes, sir. Sir?
You're still here?
Why don't you use the ship we arrived on? It's in much better shape. We could leave tomorrow. There would be no further delays.
My. Barker is thinking for himself. I don't believe I pay you for that.
No, sir.
Then get back to the work I do pay you for.
Right away, sir.
Welcome to O'Leary's, home to knickknacks, fine china, and assorted planetary outposts.
Yes, I am considering a trip to Mars and was wondering about the purchase of a suitable short-use outpost.
Well, let me see what's available. Am I to assume you have a substantial budget, sir?
You should never assume, Mr. O'Leary.
Ah, point taken. However, that does make things a bit harder. Mars hasn't been privy to many guests in the past 3 decades.
Yes, I am aware there are no current occupants. Do you or do you not have an outpost available?
As to your rather exact specifications, I am aware of only one outpost that would be suitable. And the most recent report indicates an air supply of 5 weeks. Once the pumps are turned on, apparently has a faulty rebreather apparatus. Ah, but it does have an exploration rocket if you don't mind a little tinkering. And if you like swimming, well, there's a modest pool.
Modest? You mean limited occupancy?
Yes, that I do, Mr. Thurkell.
What about sleeping quarters?
Let's see. There are 120 sleeping quarters and fully equipped galley. Although I might recommend taking ready-to-eat meals. Not many grocers on Mars.
How much of a financial saving would I realize if I were to rent the outpost?
None.
None?
I bought this outpost 30 years ago. You're the first to inquire. It's cheaper just to sell it outright than rent it and keep paying taxes. Tell you what, Mr. Thurkell, I'll give it to you for $1,000 outright.
What's the catch? That price is too good to be true.
That's the price, all right. There are 2 conditions, however, Mr. Thurkell. The first, you buy it as is. The second, you buy the rocket to get you there, from me.
You drive a hard bargain.
Yes.
Mr. Thurkell? Are you all right, Mr. Thurkell?
I'm so sorry. Can I help you?
Were you daydreaming?
I suppose I was.
We have a problem.
Well, let me get Mr. Barker. He's in charge of maintenance. Mr. Barker, please report to Master Control. Mr. Barker, to Control.
I'm afraid it's not a maintenance issue, sir.
Tell me more, Mrs. Bellows.
You know how the girls talk.
Girls? Go on.
Well, they're beginning to think this was a sham. We were supposed to make our final journey 2 weeks ago, and we've never actually seen the rocket that is supposed to take us.
I see the issue. All I can say, Mrs. Bellows, is that some delays are unavoidable.
It's a pity, really.
Pity?
Yes, they all thought you'd say that. I'm afraid we're losing heart, Mr. Thurkell. If you haven't the wherewithal to take us to heaven, then we require a refund.
My, this has become an issue. Well, please, gather the ladies in the auditorium in an hour. I'll give a progress report and a timetable for departure.
I'm so happy to hear you say that, Mr. Thurkell. We've all dealt with snake oil salesmen in the past, but this is just too important.
I completely understand. We'll meet again in an hour.
On your word, Mr. Thurkell.
On my honor, Mrs. Bellows. Confound it, Barker. Haven't I given you enough time? What am I to tell our guests?
The rocket that came with this outpost is actually much older than the outpost. If I had to guess, I would say it's 45 years old.
What choice do we have, Barker?
You could use the rocket we arrived on.
That's not a possibility.
You plan to return to Earth, then?
Look, Barker, these women don't want to return to life as it always was.
It's an adventure for them, the most thrilling of their lives, and live or die, they will meet their creator. Each believes in their own deity. Each holds tightly to the belief that finding heaven, nirvana, utopia, or Shangri-La is just a rocket ride away. Their life savings have come into my possession. One way or the other, they will get what they paid for. But I don't believe I'm ready to make such a journey. I have made it possible for them. Isn't that enough?
Would you sacrifice your crew?
Of course not, Barker. If that's what had crossed my mind, do you think I would have told you? We will fire the old rocket further into space, where each will find what they are so desperate to locate.
That's madness. You will be sending these women to their death.
It's simply business. Would you finish the rocket so we can finish our transaction?
Thurkell, you're a murderer of the worst kind. You have planned for the destruction of innocent women. I'll finish the ship because it will be needed. I'll stay up night and day if needed to make sure this precious bucket of bolts is finished.
I have your word?
Of course you have my word. But you no longer have my respect.
When will it be ready?
Saturday.
Thank you, Mr. Barker. What have I done?
We have put up with delays long enough.
And you will show it to us today.
I agree. And I'm so very sorry. I have not slept well since our arrival.
Perhaps you would sleep better if you kept your word.
I feel as if I have been lying to you from day one.
So, you admit it.
Let's hear what he has to say.
I bought this outpost without any real idea of what it would be like. The ship, such as it is, was built nearly 50 years ago. Mr. Barker has been working tirelessly to make the rocket operational. And who can know where heaven is to be found? For your safety, we will chart a course for Earth tomorrow morning in the same ship we arrived in. I cannot, in good conscience, use the ancient vessel I had hoped could be made worthy.
What are you saying, Mr. Thurkell?
I cannot send you to heaven. There are no guarantees. I am not God. Yet, I have acted the part for my own reasons. The ship meant for the next stage of your journey has little ability to get you to where you want to go.
Why can't we use the rocket that got us here?
Because I will use it to return to Earth. Wait. That's it? I could use the newer rocket, couldn't I? I still can't promise success, but you could use it. It could work. A recalibration, a fuel adjustment. Get ready, ladies. You will leave in the morning.
Oh, my.
Just think, Amelia. Heaven.
Yes. The place we left Earth to find.
It's true. So very true.
It will be home, Amelia.
Everything we've dreamed of.
You'll see Mr. Bellows once more, and Emily.
Mr. Thurkell, please correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say you can't make any promise about our journey from this point?
I never could, Mrs. Bellows.
And if we take your new rocket, you will be stranded here.
That is true. I must be honest with you, ladies. I had every plan to send you away, knowing you would likely fail.
Perhaps he should be left behind.
It would serve him right.
Could you show me the old rocket?
Mrs. Bellows, you would be so disappointed in me if you were to see it.
Still, I would like to see the old rocket.
Follow me.
Mr. Thurkell, I hadn't expected to see you with a guest.
Mrs. Bellows wanted to see the craft.
Well, as you can see, it has the elegance of times past.
Yes, Mr. Barker, I'm aware she's old. She bears the elegance of an ill-used copper teapot.
Well, I would hardly...
She knows, Barker. She knows.
Oh, but I must tell you, I'm against the use of this craft for your next venture.
Is it comfortable?
Comfortable?
The seats, are they comfortable?
Very.
Will it lift from the surface of Mars?
I believe it will, Mrs. Bellows. However, it is also a very old craft. I am strongly concerned for your safety.
Mrs. Bellows, why did you want to see the rocket?
I wanted to see the ship that would help me reach my final destination.
I thought I was clear, Mrs. Bellows. I cannot allow it.
You made a promise that you could help each of the dozens of women on this outpost reach heaven.
But it was a ruse, Mrs. Bellows. I was simply seeking to add to my personal wealth by taking yours.
I'm aware you are a charlatan. Each of us sold everything we had to come here. The conditions we met are deplorable, but the conditions back on Earth would be even worse. We're without homes. Most have given up every stitch of wealth to be here. Don't you understand, Mr. Thurkell? To return may be the worst sort of punishment. Most of us have no one to return to. The majority of our money was used to get us here.
My dear Mrs. Bellows, you can't mean...
Oh, but I can. And I do, Mr. Thurkell. I have spoken to the other women, and we all agree. There is no returning to the world we left. And I believe this old copper tea kettle will be adequate in helping us reach our final destination.
Mrs. Bellows, perhaps you missed the point. This ship could run out of fuel. It could explode. It could disintegrate before our very eyes.
He's absolutely correct, my dear Mrs. Bellows.
Be that as it may, none of us will be returning to Earth. We cannot, we will not go back. Have you not heard it said, God draws mankind to himself? Every moment we draw closer to him, perhaps he will draw closer to us in our time of need. Each of your guests need him now. Mr. Barker, do you have a family?
Yes, ma'am. A wife and two boys.
So you have a reason to return to Earth.
I do.
Mr. Thurkell, do you also have a reason to live?
I'm not certain I do.
Let's not sink into pity, Mr. Thurkell. Do you have a reason to live?
Perhaps.
Then learn from the mistakes you have made with this venture. And go home. Perhaps there is a better venture for you then.
The last thing I deserve is your kindness, Mrs. Bellows.
The gift I give you is mercy. Share it when you return home.
And what have I given you?
Poor conditions at this outpost. Horrible food. Stuffy, hard-to-breathe air. And a poor excuse for a pool. But I have never had such a grand adventure with such a beautiful end in sight. Mr. Barker, can you send the rocket off without a crew?
It is possible, but wouldn't you need a guide?
That guide is the hand of God, Mr. Barker. Whether I meet him in life or death, I'm confident Mr. Thurkell shall fulfill his promise, even if it is unintended. In the end, we will meet God. We will be reunited with family. We will find the artesian well of perpetual joy. Now, no further discussion, young man. You weary me with your concern. We will leave tomorrow morning, grateful and with anticipation.
Space has no sound. It was so peculiar to see these valiant women board the old ship, watch the ship rattle and move heavenward so silently, but with visible violence. I would not say that the men left in my care are overly religious, but we offered prayers that these brave souls find what they've been seeking for so long. Academically, we find their faith impossible. Deep within, we hope their faith saves them. We too, we'll leave soon. There is very little air left on this outpost,
The rebreather apparatus cannot keep up with even my small crew. Should I feel happy or sad? Heroic or villainous? My mind is too conflicted to tell, and I'm not sure I want an answer. Things are also quiet within this outpost. No one seems to possess the desire to speak. We are left with memories of the women who, until this morning, nurtured conversation like a newborn child. I am left with so many questions. Space, thy boundaries are time and time alone. No earthborn rocket seedling skyward sown will ever reach your cold infinite end. This power is not man's to build or send. Great deities laugh down, venting their mirth at struggling bipeds on a cloud-wrapped earth, chained solid on a war-swept waning globe for fate who witnesses to pry and probe. But list, one weapon have I stronger yet. Prepare, infinity, and God's regret. Thought, quick as light, shall pierce the veil to reach the lost beginning's holy grail. Across the sullen void on soundless trail, where new-spawned suns and chilling planets wail, one thought shall travel amidst the gods' playthings, past cindered globes where choking flame still sings. No wall of force yet have ye firmly wrought that chains the supreme strength of purest thought. Unleashed without a body slacking hold, thought leaves the ancient earth behind to mold. And when the galaxies have heeded death and welcomed lastly space's poisoned breath, still shall thought travel as an arrow flown. Space, thy boundaries are time, and time alone. Mr. Barker, ready the crew. It's time. I am being called to a second chance.
Okay, I'm confused.
You are? But I thought you would enjoy the story.
I did, but I thought the story would have something to do with my grandpa.
Well, the story wasn't for him, John. It was for you.
So who was I supposed to be? Mr. Thurkell, Mrs. Bellows, or Barker?
You were the one left behind.
That doesn't make this any clearer.
What we don't care about are the ones left behind that, had they known, they could have done something to make their aging parents or grandparents experience a sense of hope.
Hope?
Hope. The story is about something you can offer that your grandfather might just need.
How do I do that?
Do you have a lot of money, John?
No.
Then there's only one thing you can do.
What's that?
Drop by. Keep him company from time to time. Take him out to eat when the mood strikes. Erase any generation gap and just be a part of his life.
Hmm. So the story is about me. So how much for the story?
Well, you mean payment?
Of course. Nothing in life is free.
True, but this has already been paid for. So walk out those doors, John. You're being called to a second chance.
Thank you.
I really do need to get that bell fixed.
You've been listening to Sci-Fi Salvage and Restoration Company, Episode 1, One-Way Ticket. We'd like to thank our cast. Todd Sparrow as John. Joe Stofko as Storykeeper. Elise Krawick as Mrs. Bellows. Natalie Stanfield as Mrs. Myers. Trisha Grove as Mrs. Johnson. Dale McCubbins as Mr. Thurkell. Peter Catt as Mr. Barker. Glenn Haskell as O'Leary. And Scott Johnson as narrator. One-Way Ticket was adapted from Ray Bradbury's short story, A Little Journey, by Glenn Haskell, who also served as producer of this broadcast. Mixed by Sonny Steelgrave.
Executive producer and webmaster, Captain John Tatterzak.
Theme music by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Art by Anthony Yolinko. This series will focus on short stories written during the golden age of science fiction. Each story will be lovingly recreated to resemble the more campy perspective of early science fiction broadcasts. Characters in this story were not meant to bear a resemblance to anyone living or dead. This production is for enjoyment purposes only. I'm your narrator, Scott Johnson, This is an original production of Misfits Audio, copyright 2016, all rights reserved.